All right, welcome into another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Audio Boom. Do that. Leave us a five-star review. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Send us any basketball questions or advertising inquiries at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report and NBC Sports. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Cody, I am in Las Vegas. There will occasionally be airplanes flying over my hotel room, which may or may not be picked up on the recording of this podcast. I'm back here. I was here last week for Summer League. I'm here for Team USA training camp, which starts tomorrow. Jimmy Butler will be there. Bulls youngsters Doug McDermott and Denzel Valentine will be there. And Dwayne Wade is somewhere a lot more exciting than Las Vegas. He and his wife, Gabrielle Union, are in China, and they've been posting about it on Snapchat.
They are absolutely having one of the times of their lives in China on a promotional shoe tour for D-Wade, who at 8:52 on Friday evening, while many of you were out at the bar or hanging out with your families, the Bulls officially announced Dwayne Wade is a Chicago Bull. So there's no turning back now. Real life Chicago Bull. He upped it and copped on a plane to China, and he's spending approximately, at least an hour a day. I think they still have 24 hours a day over there in China. I think he's spending an hour a day on Snapchat posting videos of himself at all these stores and just the scene of the fans just loving D-Wade in China is something remarkable. And obviously not to Dream Team 1992 levels at the Olympics, not to the level of Kobe in China, but they absolutely love Dwayne Wade, new Chicago Bull over there. Who thought that the Bulls would have someone so huge in such a large country in the biggest market, China?
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, basketball, just in general, is incredibly popular in China, so much so that Stephon Marbury, after he was done with his NBA career, he went over and played in the Chinese Basketball Association, and he was so successful that not only is there a statue of him there, there is also a musical written about him that is performed in China. So that's part of this. And then the other part of this.
I had absolutely no idea. I knew none of that Marbury stuff.
Did you not know that? This has been a thing for like a few years. Stephon Marbury, there is a Stephon Marbury musical in China.
I feel like I knew the stories of him throwing up like 52 and 54 points in Chinese games, but I had no idea he was such a cultural icon.
No, Stephon Marbury is a god over there. Not quite as much as Kobe is, but when I was at the finals out in Oakland, I was talking to a lady who works at the Chinese offices that the NBA has, and she was telling me everything about how big, the NBA is in China and how it's only been getting bigger, and it's been that way since Yao Ming came into the league. He was really the catalyst for a lot of people in China starting to pay attention to the NBA, but like, even though Yao's career has been over for several years, the interest in the NBA in China has not really dissipated, and I think a big part of Dwayne Wade's popularity there is that he's one of the chief endorsers of Li Ning, which is a shoe brand there.
Yeah, and the other aspect here too is that it's kind of like two worlds colliding, because the Bulls are the most iconic team with a global reach, more or less, dating back to the Michael Jordan days. So they're well known over in China as well, but moral of the story, Dwayne Wade having a fun time in China. His spirits are up after he'd insinuated several times that he was almost in disbelief, basically, that he was a Chicago Bull. He seems to be all in, having a good time on that. Somebody whose spirits are down, that would be Miami Heat president, basketball boss, Pat Riley.
Yeah, he seemed pretty broken up about it a couple days ago at his press conference.
He held his annual State of the Heat press conference on Saturday, in which he expressed, quote, great regret on letting Dwayne Wade go and not playing a larger role. He said, this was not about money. This was about something else. And then Riley went on to explain that he wished he had done more. What did you read into those quotes of Pat Riley, Scott?
I think he's saying that in order to make the Heat fans not turn on him for letting Dwayne Wade go. I mean, just one thing that seems totally clear to me, just from the outside, if the Heat wanted Dwayne Wade to still be in Miami, Dwayne Wade would still be in Miami. Pat Riley, this was a calculated decision by both him and by ownership that they didn't want to give him the, they wanted to still contend. They didn't want to give him the Kobe contract that had just kind of hamstrung the Lakers over the last couple of years when Kobe wasn't as productive as he used to be, but he was still taking up so much of their salary cap that they couldn't get other free agents, that they still had to do a lot, you know, around what he, you know, what he was doing. So, like, I feel like this was kind of a way to both fall on the sword and say I should have done more, but also just kind of, you know, absolve, like, saying that, yes, I feel bad about this, too. This wasn't a totally heartless thing by me. I don't know. I have a hard time really taking him very seriously when he's saying that he really didn't do all he could.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, Pat Riley has, like, pretty much always got what Pat Riley's wanted here with the Heat. I mean, he got Shaq in that big trade in the mid-2000s. Then he kicked Van Gundy off the coaching ranks, basically, and went down and coached the Heat to a title. Then he got LeBron, D-Wade, Chris Bosh trio. So, I mean, he missed on Kevin Durant. They wanted him this offseason. But again, Pat Riley usually gets what he wants. So he certainly could have done more, but he also knew exactly what he was doing. So, I'm sure he does have regret, but I think it's more emotional, personal regret than it is basketball regret, because he knew that moving forward in the future, Dwayne Wade's a basketball risk. And that's a risk the Bulls are taking. And on that note, Fred Hoiberg, now that the Dwayne Wade signing's official, he finally got to talk about D-Wade a little bit, and he told Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune about D-Wade. We have multiple playmakers now, multiple guys who can get into the paint. We do have floor spacing on this team. It will be important to have guys who can knock down shots. So Fred is really excited about this Dwayne Wade signing, which I think we obviously expected. Every public quote he says is going to be along those lines. That's no surprise. But what do you read into those quotes at all? And Hoiberg also said, great players always figure it out. It has to be about one thing, and that's winning. What do you make of all that, Sean?
Well, so it's funny that he said great players always figure it out, because that is literally verbatim something that Tom Thibodeau told me about this exact same situation. He and I saw him last week at Summer League, and we were just kind of chatting a little bit while we were watching one of the games, and I just mentioned something about how I was kind of curious to see how Wade and Rondo and Jimmy Butler would figure out how to share the ball, and he said, great players always figure it out. Like, that was the exact same quote. So, I mean, that seems like that's just kind of the conventional wisdom about this stuff. Now, as far as those public comments, like, he's not going to say publicly, yeah, you know, I'm really worried, you know, this is going to be a chemistry disaster, and these guys aren't going to be able to figure it out, and they both want to be the man. He's not going to say that, especially a guy like Fred Hoiberg, who is such a politician, and he doesn't want to offend anybody. That, like,
yeah,
that's just not...
I find the great players will always figure it out comment kind of funny, because the Bulls don't exactly have great players, but also I feel like that figure it out part is like a new motto of them dating back to like signing Rondo, because the Bulls are just kind of like, we'll figure it out. We'll add Rondo. We'll add Wade. We'll figure it out. Like, the plan pivoted so quickly, and you could say anything you want, but no one in basketball circles envisioned Dwayne Wade coming to the Bulls. And that includes Dwayne Wade, who's basically said it himself, Pat Riley, who's basically said it himself, and the Bulls, who, when they signed Dwayne Wade on, or agreed to terms with Dwayne Wade on the night of July 6th, it wasn't until late that afternoon that the Bulls really, truly felt they were going to get Dwayne Wade, or could get Dwayne Wade, or had that inside track. So that's all a complete shock, basically. So that just goes back to the, well, here it is, let's do it. Let's figure it out. And the question is, how are they going to figure it out?
Well, I have one thing I want to add. Great players don't always figure it out. The Lakers, when they got Steve Nash and Dwight Howard, those are two great players, and that whole season was a disaster. I mean, there are some times where there's just so much talent, and it fits together so well that, like, you know, it's going to be interesting, for example, this summer, this upcoming season, to watch how the Warriors, you know, integrate Kevin Durant, but, like, that's a little bit of a different thing. Like, they have too much talent to not figure it out. The Heat, when LeBron and Bosh went there in 2010, had too much talent not to figure it out. This, you know, I don't think it's going to be a chemistry disaster on that level with the Lakers, just because, you know, the Kobe and Dwight had such opposite personalities that, like, I just don't really know how that situation, in hindsight, it was pretty amazing that anybody thought that that was going to work out so well, but if for any reason, because of the talent. But this seems like this is closer to that to me than it is to Kevin Durant going to the Warriors.
Yeah, and I mean, you just referenced the Heat too, and I think that's an excellent reference, because if you remember, it really started working out in Miami when Dwayne Wade and LeBron figured out the alpha dog role, that it was LeBron. But the other big key everyone might overlook is that Chris Bosh took a diminished role, mm-hmm. and accepted doing some of the dirty work, some of the outside shooting, being the third guy, not getting touches every possession, sometimes just being a floor spacer. And that's why they took off too, because he had Chris Bosh is just such a good guy and has such a small ego. Like, he really wanted to do what's best for the team. So in a parallel there, I know this is apples and oranges, or even farther apart than that because of the talent discrepancy there, but if you are going to have three ball-dominant guys, three guys who want to create and have get to the hoop and everything, a couple of those guys on different occasions every time down the floor are going to have to kind of take a secondary or tertiary role even for the Bulls, so they have to figure that out. And I don't know how exactly they do that, and that's probably Fred Hoiberg's biggest kind of task on his plate, I would think.
Right, and I mean, I think part of why that was still able to work out, I don't know who would take the smaller role here, who would be willing to, and even if one of them agreed to do that, how it would fit together, because, I mean, they kind of have, you know, when the big three Heat, you know, LeBron and Wade are both ball-dominant guys, but they were both, you know, Wade was a guard, LeBron was a forward, Bosh was a big man who eventually they figured out, hey, he can shoot threes and he can guard guys on the perimeter. And so, like, eventually, you know, once they figured out the personality stuff, those three were able to complement each other in terms of skills on the basketball court, whereas, you know, these three guys, Rondo, Wade, and Butler, are all pretty redundant in terms of, you know, they're all guys that need the ball a lot, none of them are good shooters. Jimmy is the only one at this point. Rondo and Wade have both been very good defenders at certain points in their careers when they were younger, but I don't think either one of them is nearly the defender that they were in the past now. You know, Jimmy's the only one that at this point can be considered an elite defender. Maybe he's the one that, you know, focuses on that end and really just becomes like the, you know, a Kawhi Leonard type just defensive stopper. But like, they also, there's a dynamic of they traded Derrick Rose to give him the team, and he's already tasted being the number one option on offense, and I just don't see him really saying, yeah, you know, we got 30-something-year-old Rondo and Wade, let me just take a back seat here when I'm 26.
Yeah, you know what really helped, though, Sean?
What?
Nikola Mirotic shooting the basketball.
Yes.
Really well from the outside. That would be a huge help.
It would, and he, you know, he's been able to do that very well at times, and our friend Stefan Noe at The Athletic had a real interesting article about how he kind of, you know, after he came back, because remember, he had that appendectomy around January or February of last season,
yep.
And then he had the complications from that surgery and missed about 6 weeks, and then he comes back, and he shot the ball extremely well towards the end of the season. So, I mean, I think the hope for the Bulls is that he can continue that, and, you know, that's going to be a sustainable thing. And, you know, having these other guards who are so ball-dominant, and, you know, a guy like Dwayne Wade, even though he's not as good as he was a couple years ago, he still commands a double team, and so does Jimmy Butler. So I think the hope for the Bulls is that having those two guys out there that, you know, teams have to focus so much on defensively is going to get Mirotić so many more open shots, you know, in a way that, you know, Derrick Rose has never been consistently healthy enough or good enough to be that kind of guy that can draw multiple defenders, and he's never been able to get Mirotić that many open shots. So I think that's what the hope is.
Yeah. And there's some really telling numbers here. Again, a great article on The Athletic Chicago. Go give it a read. But Nikola Mirotić got 39% last year in his second year from behind the arc, 35% before the All-Star break, 45% after the All-Star break. So as you said, Sean, much better later in the year. He shot 42% on catch and shoot three-pointers, basically those where he was spotting up or he just caught right into a rhythm. He shot 17% on pull-up threes, and those are the ones basically where he put the ball on the floor, try to pump fake, dribble, and I know every Bulls fan hates Nico's pump fakes, and the pull-up threes would fall into that category. Those pump fakes, 17%, really bad. 44% on corner threes, 37% on three-pointers above the break. So you can see the numbers there. When he's stationary, spotted up, ready to hit, he's a good three-point shooter. When he's in the corner, he's a good three-point shooter. When he tries to do too much, he's not an off-the-dribble, off-the-bounce guy, and he's bad. So the Bulls somehow have to find a way to integrate him into the system where they can get him spaced and ready to shoot and not having to do anything with his own playmaking. And that, I guess that gives you hope with Wade, Rondo, and Butler that Nico doesn't need to dribble as much or like at all anymore, didn't you think?
Yeah, and I mean, he's really not a guy, as you said, he's not the kind of guy that can do a lot off the dribble, but if you have Rondo, Wade, and Butler on the floor with him, he's not going to have to. He's gonna, you know, those are the guys that are going to be initiating the offense. Those are the guys that are going to be setting stuff up. All he has to really do at this point is stand in the corner and shoot when he's open.
Yeah, and that comes along the lines of, we had a question from a reader named Paul via email, and you can email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Why is it set in stone that Nikola Mirotic should start at power forward? Why can't Taj Gibson start at power forward and you can have five pretty good defenders and still get out in transition? Do you think Fred could make that game plan work? And I want to clarify, Nikola Mirotic isn't set in stone. It's likely that he starts at power forward. The Bulls haven't confirmed that. We haven't even gotten to training camp. We're basically using common sense here. But the Bulls have to start Nico at power forward, right, Sean?
Yeah, and, you know, again, to be clear, you know, Fred has not said one way or the other who's going to be the starter at any position. I think four of the starters are pretty much set in stone. It's going to be Rondo, Wade, Butler, and Robin Lopez at center. And then the power forward is still a little bit in flux. Taj Gibson, and we've talked about this before, but Taj Gibson, just based on seniority, you know, he's going into his eighth year in the league. He has proven to be just very solid at both ends of the floor. He does what's asked. He plays through injuries. Just in terms of seniority and in terms of his standing on the team, you would think, and, you know, there's always been talk that Taj might get traded. I think Taj might be the player that's been traded the most times without actually being traded in the NBA at this point. But if he stays on the team, the, you know, conventional wisdom would be, yeah, he's going to be the starter because he started a lot of the time last year after Hoiberg tried to start Mirotic alongside Pau Gasol, and then Mirotic kind of fell out of the starting lineup, and then they put Taj in there. And, I mean, I just think you have to start Mirotic just because you can't have zero guys that are a threat to shoot from the outside. You can't have that just not be a factor in today's NBA.
Yeah, and then, I mean, when we just read those stats off of Nico, I mean, he's not good at shooting threes when he has to create. If you don't start him, then he's playing more minutes of second-unit guys, and then he's expected to do more himself, which he's not good at. So you're only making that initial problem worse. So last year, it was a little weird. It was understandable that Fred kind of gift-wrapped that starting job for Nikola Mirotic out of training camp.
Whoa. Okay, just to be clear, it wasn't Mirotic that got gift-wrapped the starting spot, because I said back at the time that what they should have done was started Mirotic alongside Joakim Noah. It was Pau Gasol that they were never going to not start because he was more likely to, you know, not take that well than Noah was.
You do raise an excellent point there. I feel like that's a discussion we had a lot last year. But operating under the assumption that Pau being a future Hall of Famer and having a lot of pride and an ego, a basketball ego, there was pretty obvious that he was going to start. So it was a weird fit to put Mirotic by Gasol, but at the same time, you kind of saw where Fred was coming from because he wanted to get his shooting and entire system, dive in, get it on the floor. It backfired. It didn't work. This time, it makes more sense to start Nico at the four, a better fit, a better complement for the players you already have out there. And I also want to point out, five pretty good defenders on the floor with Taj Gibson out there, like, I don't know. I don't think the Bulls need to have some kind of defensive calling card this year, you know what I mean?
I would also dispute the five pretty good defenders part of that. You've got three pretty good defenders.
Rondo and Wade are not.
No, not at this point. They were. Rondo was before the ACL tear. He was one of the best defensive point guards in the league, but at this point, that was 3.5 years ago, and Wade, I mean, you can still, like, his shot-blocking numbers are still pretty good for a guard, but Wade, especially, you know, he's getting to the point in his career where he has to kind of preserve himself and, you know, save his body for the playoffs. He played 74 games this year, which was the most games he's played since the 2010-11 season. You can't really count on either of those guys. So they have three pretty good defenders in their starting lineup if they started Taj with Taj, Jimmy, and Robin Lopez. But, you know, the idea of having five pretty good defenders, I don't think there's a lineup they can put out there that has five good defenders in it.
Yeah, you know who else would be a really bad defender for the Bulls?
Who?
His name would be Rudy Gay. We got a question from Ryan via email.
You know, we've gotten a few Rudy Gay questions, and we just haven't gotten around to responding to any of them.
Did the Bulls consider trading Rondo and Tony Snell for another power forward like Rudy Gay? And I'm going to make this answer really short and sweet. No, they shouldn't try to consider doing that.
In a vacuum, I actually don't hate the idea of a team taking a gamble on Rudy Gay. His contract has become pretty affordable for the, you know, under the current salary cap. And it's, you know, he's still a valuable NBA player. He can shoot from the mid-range. He's, you know, he can score in a number of different ways, but he is just not a good fit for what the Bulls have on their team. They've already got, and I know Rudy Gay is somewhat of a small ball four at this point, but they've already got the hashtag three alphas, the guys who want to have the ball all the time. Rudy Gay is the same way. I just don't see that being the kind of fit that would work out at all.
Yeah, and I mean, the best use for him, like you said, is a smaller small ball four, and it feels like you need to invest in Nikola Mirotić, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
See what he's made of, see if he can shoot that 40-something percent from behind the arc like he did in the second half of last year. That makes more sense to me. We have another email along those lines as well. You guys are just great. Mitchell, I
people are about the fake trade lately.
They are coming strong with trade rumors or trade ideas still, and we get this email from Matt. Should the Bulls look at getting someone like Kenneth Faried? His contract seems reasonable after the salary cap spike, and he fits perfectly into the Bulls' vision of removing all spacing and playing players who peaked back in 2012. Taj Gibson and Tony Snell would fit for salary cap purposes. Is there any chance of a deal like this happening? Kenneth Faried to the Chicago Bulls some point down the line.
Well, I can't argue with his logic about why he fits if they really want to go all in on the players who aren't as good as they were a few years ago and can't shoot from three at all. I mean, yeah, I you know, I'm a little bit higher on Faried still than a lot of people are, but that's also just a guy I don't see being a fit. I also just want to mention, by the way, that Taj Gibson and Tony Snell, do you remember a few years ago the Brooklyn Nets were calling around to every team in the league trying to trade their package of Chris Humphries, Marshawn Brooks, and a first-round pick, and it became this Twitter hashtag HBAP? I feel like Taj Gibson and Tony Snell is going to become the Bulls' version of that.
We lead up to what, February 19th or something to trade deadline, so we got a good like 7 months of this or something.
Get all your Taj Gibson trade rumors out of the way now. For the record, I still think that he is going to be traded between now and the trade deadline. I don't know to who, I don't know for what, but he is a free agent next summer. He doesn't at this point figure into the Bulls' long-term plans. He's going to want more money next offseason than the Bulls are probably going to be willing to give him. And he's also the kind of guy, the Bulls, we can all agree, are not a title contender, but he's the kind of guy that if a contender wants him to be, you know, just a guy who does the defensive dirty work and doesn't need the ball and does what's asked of him, he'd be a great guy to have. And I think that's somebody a lot of guys are going to look at the trade deadline, and the Bulls are probably going to make a deal for him, or maybe they don't, but they do, you know, there is about 7 months left of Taj trade rumors.
Yeah, and I think I think Chris Felicio, too, if he plays well, I know he's a center and Taj is a power forward, but between him and Bobby Portis, if they play well...
First team all-summer league selection, Bobby Portis, yeah, by the way. That
Bobby Portis was first team. And if they play well, too, Taj is a little more expendable because you have four guys for those minutes at center and power forward instead of five. And again, the Bulls, there's no championship aspirations this year that are realistic. So if they could get something for Taj, that would be helpful for the future. They have to keep that in mind as they do this quasi-rebuild, quasi-look to the future. Who knows what they're doing exactly, because we never know. But Taj Gibson would help any contender, basically, because he's a low-maintenance guy, works hard to play good D, and it's fine coming off the bench. But moving on to another email question from Ferris via email. Adrian Wojnarowski wrote an interesting article about Nikola Vucevic of the Magic and how he's kind of in no man's land and expendable after the Magic added Serge Ibaka and still need big minutes for Aaron Gordon, their young guy who slashed a lot of potential. I want the Bulls to pursue this trade and unload Taj Gibson, Tony Snell, Mirotić, and the Kings pick, some form of those. What do you think of this trade? So we're staying along the Taj Gibson trade rumors, the Tony Snell trade rumors. You already hit it on the head, Sean. Nikola Vucevic of the Magic, what do you think about his trade value?
Did you enjoy what Pau Gasol gave the Bulls the last 2 years with a lot of fantasy numbers and not a lot of defense or rim protection and kind of a ball stopper? Because that's kind of what you're getting with Vucevic. Like, I mean, to be clear, I think Vucevic is a good player also, and I agree with the idea that he really should get moved at some point, because with what the Magic, and I really have no idea what the Magic are doing, but that's a different discussion. But they, you know, they traded for Serge Ibaka, they signed Bismack Biyombo, they signed Jeff Green, which I don't get that in any context, and then they still have Aaron Gordon at the four, who's a young guy that they still really believe in. But yeah, Vucevic seems like kind of the odd man out there. He's gonna be a guy that is gonna probably be looked to be moved at some point, but I just don't see a fit for Chicago.
Yeah, he's pretty much a one-dimensional player. I mean, he's a good post-up player, can do a little bit by the way of the jumper and pick and roll, but he doesn't do anything defensively for you, really. He's not a good passer. Like, the Bulls need to keep in mind players that, like, have multiple skills. They've had too many one-dimensional players, so he doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? I just don't see how that would fit with anything Fred wants to do. So while he's available, I don't think that would be a wise move for the Bulls in any regard. And to be clear, we haven't heard anything by way of that trade rumor, read it anywhere, heard anything about it, publicly, privately, anything like that. That figures to go to the February trade deadline as well, one of those moves.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine there's going to be really a lot of moves of any kind unless they find the kind of deal for Taj that they would want, where they're going to get, you know, either a first-round pick or another rotation player back. That's the only thing left that I could see them doing, because they already did the they unloaded Calderon, and they unloaded Mike Dunleavy, which were the two things they had to do to make the Wade trade happen, or make the Wade signing happen, rather. And those were the ones that we had kind of thought about as, you know, those are the guys they're trying to unload. And I guess Taj is sort of in that category. But at this point, now that they're not really rebuilding and going young anymore, Taj might be just the kind of guy that you want to keep around, because he makes you better.
Yeah, he does. And he's a great locker room presence. But I think over the next 7 months, we'll spend plenty of time talking about more trade rumors that involve Taj Gibson. But I can't believe, so we put the email questions out there, and all of these are out here giving us trade rumor questions and looking months down the line, and we have a Bulls team that's playing for a championship tomorrow night, Slide. I mean, in Vegas, for a championship, and you're going to be there. Summer League Championship, Bulls versus Timberwolves, after the Bulls rallied in the semifinals to beat the rival Cleveland Cavaliers 85-79 on the strength of Bobby Portis and Chris Bligio combined for 34 points. Do you think the Bulls can win the title, Sean?
I think there's a very good chance that Tom Thibodeau gets Karl Anthony Towns to come to Las Vegas and play 48. And I think it's 40. I think the Summer League games are 40 minutes because they're 10-minute quarters. Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins are both going to be playing 40 minutes tomorrow for the Timberwolves. I think Tibbs would really like to beat the Bulls in the Summer League championship. But, you know, I can't say I've really watched any of the Summer League Bulls games after I've left Vegas. I will be there tomorrow at Thomas and Mack Center for the final game. But, you know, I mean, it's possible. I mean, somebody did ask us on Twitter earlier if they would get rings, and I would certainly love to be there for ring night when, you know, bring Jack Cooley back, bring Rashid Suleiman, who's also on the Summer League team, Dez Wells, some of these other dudes who are just dudes that aren't going to make the team. Just let them get a ring. Next year, I look forward to possibly interviewing Fred Hoiberg underneath the Summer League Championship banner at Thomas and Mack Center, which, again, is a thing that they actually do hang up there.
It would be the Bulls' first Summer League Championship, to my knowledge. I even looked this up, and it only goes back a few years. But this would be their first.
Well,
because
they didn't start doing the tournament until like 3 years ago. I think they changed up the format to make it more exciting to fans. It used to be that just the teams would just play for a couple weeks, and you'd get a look at the young guys, and then Warren Legarry, who is a very prominent kind of power broker in NBA circles. He's the agent of a lot of coaches and GMs, and he's kind of the mastermind behind Summer League. He created the event. He's kind of been in charge of helping it grow, and he's done a terrific job of that. But he decided, like, since they do sell these tickets to the public, they want to make it more exciting and make it something that people want to go to. And so that's why the Summer League Championship Tournament was introduced.
Yeah. And I do want to point out several points, quick point.
Yeah.
The Timberwolves are already ingrained in the culture of Tom Thibodeau. Tyus Jones, the Summer League MVP, injured his left wrist in the first half of the game tonight in the other semifinal, the first one. Goes to the floor in big pain, goes to the locker room, gets it wrapped. They interview like the sixth assistant of the Timberwolves, whoever it is, who's coaching them. I think it's Saunders, actually.
Ryan Saunders, flip
coach. Yeah. And he didn't know whether Tyus Jones was going to be able to play or not. And then 1 minute after they're done with the TV sideline interview entering the second half, Tyus Jones walks past the camera, tells Saunders, hey, I can go in, and he just goes in and he leads them to victory. So that's definitely the Tom Thibodeau mentality, the guy who once told Taj Gibson when he had a grade 2 ligament tear in his hand and Taj kept getting chopped on the block and in big pain, Gibbs goes, Taj, where are you from? And Taj goes, Brooklyn. And he said, basically, play like you're from Brooklyn. And then Taj just kept playing through it. I'll never forget that. Another point I wanted to make, Sean, was I think it was you and I who said the Bulls were going to wreck the Summer League with this roster. So I don't mean to brag. We're not going to brag often because we're usually wrong. But when we're right, I think we need to tell the people, right?
Absolutely. I think if anybody ever needs Summer League betting tips, we are members of the media. We're not allowed to gamble on Summer League games. But if you ever want to, if you're ever in Las Vegas and want to bet on Summer League games, we did get this right. We said that the Bulls had a legitimate chance at winning the Summer League championship because they have so many guys on their roster who are actually going to be on the team. And I think we made this point before the Rondo and Wade stuff happened. And so we were kind of talking about how this is like most of the Bulls rotation. And that's obviously not the case anymore. But yeah, the Bulls were as dominant as expected in Summer League. And they have a chance to win the championship tomorrow. And when they do, I believe the plan is still to introduce Dwayne Wade at the Advocate Center or at the United Center on July 29th. I wonder if that's going to also coincide with the hanging of the banner. Or are they going to save that for opening night?
I trust you more than anyone to find out tomorrow night if they win when the championship banner raising ceremony is going to be. So if the Bulls win, play Monday night, I believe it is 8 p.m. Central Time, I believe.
Yes.
Later in the evening here in Chicago, they'll play the Timberwolves. The Bulls, as far as we know, will be trotting out the Fab Five of Dinwiddie, Valentine, Bobby Portis. Who am I missing there? Jerry and Grant and Chris Felicio. So I think they got a good chance to win. And that's what you'll be following tomorrow. But also, the big news, obviously, will be Jimmy Butler is expected to speak publicly for the first time since the Dwayne Wade acquisition, at least in a group setting.
And since Rondo. I think the last time he talked in public was when he was on the Rachel Nichols show right after the Rose trade and right after the trade rumors on draft night. He hasn't talked since the Rondo signing. He hasn't talked since the Wade signing. And the Wade signing, as we pointed out earlier, is official now. So he can't couch it in, well, I can't talk about that yet.
Yeah. And I think Jimmy will have some good thoughts. I hope you guys all ask what is the relationship with Dwayne Wade and how he kind of envisions that is, because in the past it hasn't, despite having shared Marquette roots, they haven't been particularly close or anything, but it is a big relationship for the Bulls as it pertains to their success next season. So we'll be back. I think we'll have a podcast some sort tomorrow as well, or if you're listening to it here on Monday, we'll have a new one for Tuesday. Until then, I think Sean has got it on lockdown in Las Vegas for us.
I do, and as always, remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom. Leave us a 5-star review. Follow me on Twitter at Hyken. Follow Cody on Twitter at Cody Westerlund. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. If you have any basketball questions or advertising inquiries, send them to LockedOnBulls@gmail.com, and we will talk to you again soon.